Okay, welcome to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenner Gregan, that's Johnny Horsley over there, and today we talk about the come down of San Diego Comic-Con. It's been a week since we were there. We just left last Sunday night, and we've put up some new episodes since then.
I miss it, though, man. I miss the Comic-Con.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We have put up some other episodes, mostly our Mike Grell interview, the big interview that we were very excited to bring to everybody.
And a video interview, too, on our YouTube channel. You can actually watch the video, too, if you want.
Yeah, don't watch that. I'm too fat in that one.
No, watch it, because I put a lot of time into editing that and using my shitty editing skills to make it look halfway somewhat decent, maybe.
You did an amazing job, actually, because he took stuff from GoPro, stuff from an iPhone, and sliced them together to make a cohesive video that I don't know who that interviewer guy was, but he was amazing on doing the interview with Mike Grell there. So, yeah,
who was that guy? Who's hired? We should hire him.
We should hire him. He might want to lose a couple pounds before he gets on camera again, though.
We'll pay him double what we pay ourselves, right?
Yeah, we'll pay you double what we make. I promise you. I'll give you 1,000 times more money than what I make here.
There you go.
But it was an impressive time.
You know, as somebody who's been to Comic-Con before and you who's gone to Emerald City before, it's definitely a different experience than what you're used to going to a normal con.
That's right. It's very much a pop culture con. Well, I think all the cons are starting to turn more into what San Diego is. Yeah, like the...
I mean, Emerald City is going that way. It's going that way.
Oh, big time. And New York City and, you know, Baltimore and what's some of the other bigger ones? Chicago.
C2E2 in Chicago, MegaCon down in Florida.
You know what I'd like to go to? Is we should go check out Dragon Con in Atlanta.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, because I don't really remember it. So it'd be cool to go to it sober.
Right. That'd be fun. I mean, I'll go to any con, honestly. I love cons. They're draining, but they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's the thing. We got home Sunday night. We got home Monday night because we drove. I slept so hard and then woke up late for work Tuesday morning. Which they were more than okay with.
I didn't go to the office Tuesday. I stayed home and worked from home. I was like, nope, not going in.
Yeah. And then even Tuesday night, I slept really hard and was out by like 10 p.m.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was still tired from the con until about Thursday.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually recovered all the way 100% yet.
It takes a lot out of you. I mean, you're up at like 6, 7 in the morning, and we were up until 1 at night, especially because we were doing the podcast, so... We had super long days, short sleep times, then walking around a huge con all day, and you with a broken foot doing that.
Yeah, and my foot is still broken, and that kind of messed up my whole healing process. So it's hurting quite a bit these last couple of days.
Hopefully not permanent. Hopefully it heals fine.
Yeah, right.
You'll always remember this con because you're a fucked up foot.
For the con. So, Johnny, tell me, what was your favorite aspect of the con this year?
Honestly, I got to say my favorite aspect of the con is a tie between two things. One, talking with Mike Grell, because that was just intense. It was awesome. You know, talking to somebody who I've respected as an artist and as a creator for the last, you know, over a decade, and you for, you know, the last 20 years. After you left on Sunday, because you left early on Sunday because there was nothing left to do, hanging out with Kaylee at the Cryptozoic booth and kind of getting to know this guy, Kyle, who is their marketing manager and also one of their lead designers and painters for their figures, just spending like an hour and a half talking with him, becoming friends with them. That was really cool, too, because I got to see the other side of those figurines that you don't like to buy, but I like to buy.
Right. And, well, let's be fair. It's not that I don't want to buy them or don't like them. It's that I know my addiction when it comes to collecting this type of stuff.
Right.
And I don't need another addiction.
Right. No, it was exactly. But it was cool because, you know, Kaylee really wanted those Golden Goddess statues, whatever they were, that were limited to 250. And so we just waited around. We got a pair, but we talked to the guy who designed that color scheme he designed all the different paint variants for those statues. And it was just cool to get an insider's look into this company that normally you would say is, oh, it's just a company. There's no creative process behind it. But really, there's a, you know, it's a huge, this guy's an art major. I follow him on Instagram now, and he's got, you know, he's a great artist.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And there's some things that might be happening with us in Cryptozoic because of your
hopefully
unending way of talking with somebody.
Yeah, I talk a lot.
Well, once you know somebody, you talk a lot.
I'll talk your ear off, man. I'll talk to you for hours about anything.
But that's cool. I mean, we really try to get out there. We really try to meet as many people as we can, letting them know about what we're doing here, how much we love this medium. And it's really, you know, one of my favorite spots was, of course, talking to Grell.
Yeah.
But beyond that was hanging out, me and Cody going to every single comp shop within the con and looking for particular books. And we went on the hunt, and that boy, 14 years old, did a good job of finding things that I wasn't finding. And he was like, I found it. And then he only paid $2 and I paid 10. It's like, you little fucker. I can't believe it.
No, he knows how to hunt and he knows how to get a good deal. He won't pay full price for, I taught him well. He won't pay full price for shit.
Yeah. Yeah, he did a good job. He had I think he had a lot of fun down there.
He did.
Next time, if he's able to go, then maybe we do some more kid-centric or teenage-centric things.
Yeah. He had a lot of fun. I mean, he's the reason why I have the Warlord 1 signed, you know, because he found that.
Yeah, right. But I think next time we could just give him a phone and let him go. Say, just go have fun and don't worry about it.
Well, it was cool. It was cool because this year, the last time I went in 06, you know, there was no, I mean, obviously 11 years ago, cell phone coverage has definitely improved. But this year, there was no problem with cell phone coverage there.
None at all.
Which was awesome.
None at all.
Well, one of the big things they tell you when going to a big con is don't expect your cell phones to work very well. Because even in Emerald City, sometimes my cell phone doesn't really work that well.
I think Emerald City suppresses the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because it's like, I don't understand it. It's like, because the booths have to pay for Wi-Fi connection. I think that's why.
Yeah.
And I think that's just crap.
Because I noticed last year in Emerald City, when I was buying comics, because I always try to look up books to make sure I'm getting a good deal on them before I pay for them.
Yeah.
And I noticed that Emerald City last year when I was doing that, I'd have really shitty connection and things wouldn't load all the time. But at San Diego this year, there was no problem with getting things to pull up on my phone or calling. You know,
not at all.
It was gravy.
It made it nice because then if you'll stop, you'll like something catches your eye and you'll stop and start looking. And the other couple people that you're with, all of a sudden they keep walking. They don't notice that you stopped.
And you're gone.
You look up and everybody's gone. You're like, where is everybody?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's nice that they had cell phone coverage and good coverage.
Yeah.
With, you know, and we use AT&T and it had perfect coverage in there.
It was nice. Yeah, it was great. I still think, thinking back on it, I still know for a fact there's aisles we didn't walk down at that con.
Oh, like, yeah, most definitely.
There's a whole section of aisles we kept missing because we kept thinking we were there and we never went to those aisles because I for whatever reason, we just didn't walk down them. And who knows what was down there.
Tell your wife to stay away from the T-shirts.
I can't. She likes my clothes. I can't help that.
You can say it. You just, you know, or you can just say, okay, well, you go off and do that. We're going to go do this.
Yeah. She spent most of our wad on clothes and sweatshirts and stuff.
Oh, yeah. You guys. It was a lot of fun. I think the other thing was getting to spend some quality time with my niece, which me and her don't get to do that a lot.
Yeah, she really enjoyed that.
As much as we'd like to, we don't get to do it as much as we've had in the past. When she was growing up, before she was a teenager and went off and did her own thing, we were always around each other.
Yeah.
You know, that we had a lot of times like that, but our adult age has not been the same. So it was nice to be able to have that time. It was cool. And it was cool to have that type of setting that we're both geeking out about.
Yeah, she's definitely gone more geeky in the last about 5 years than she ever was before. Not mostly, but entirely because of me. You know,
you've been a positive influence or a negative influence, depending on which way you want to look at it.
Definitely positive, I hope.
I liked, but I did like seeing all the books. I liked seeing the amount of comic shop owners that were there because it did start as a comic con. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah, there was a good amount. I mean, there really wasn't a ton of people who had comics there, but there was enough, you know.
Because I felt like at Emerald City last year, I went in 2015 and then I went in 2017. I didn't go in 2016. But right. It felt like to me from 2015 to 2017, like 30 to 45% of the comic book stores are not there. You know, there's less people selling comics there.
There is.
And it's sad to me because that's a big part of it.
Yeah, it's because Read Pop did a thing where they're letting in more trinket dealers, like people who sell pops or keychains or, you know, the stuff, more stuff the everyday average consumer is going to buy versus the comics. But I think that's a step in the wrong direction because people go to a comic shop or comic show to buy those and to see comics and buy comics. So it's a disservice for them to do that. Now, I hope that Emerald City has, you know, brings back some more of the comic shop, but they're also, with them raising prices, those comic shops can't afford to get into it.
You know, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to maximize profit. They're trying to attract the widest audience, right? And the people that just want to go there for the comics is it's probably 1%. The people coming in are there to look at comic books.
Right.
You really got to think about it. You know, it's all the movies, it's the stars, it's getting the movie star signatures, it's the cosplay. And the cosplay does not just go by comic books anymore. It's, you know, the anime,
it's
and
everything.
The video games. And movies. You know, the video game section was huge this year at San Diego Comic-Con. It was ginormous.
Yeah, it was kind of sad. They had, I'm normally not into, I really don't care about video games too much anymore in my life because I don't have time for them. However,
right.
I have been and always will be a huge fan of the Marvel vs. Capcom series, the fighting game, because it's so fun. And they had the new one there, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, there that you could play. And I didn't get a chance to sit down and play it, and it looks amazing. I really want to play it.
That's cool. The things that worries me is that the pop culture starts overtaking everything, and then they push out the comic guys. And it's not that they need to have the comic guys there or there's a degree of loyalty that needs to be adhered to. I mean, a part of me says there should be. For some of those comic guys, that's their biggest nut of the year, you know? Because they get people that would never come into their shop or not even look at comics, coming and looking at comics and going, oh, you know, and buying it. And some of those artists, you know, they get people that remember having Spider-Man or remember having whatever it was back in the day, and all of a sudden there's the artist that drew the pictures that they grew up looking at, and they're like, oh, and they get nostalgic and they actually buy stuff, and then they get a signature and these things. And so it pumps much needed funding into the industry, and if they start to slowly decline that out, that's a sad thing.
It is. And I hope and I don't think that we'll ever see a day where you go to Emerald City, you go to San Diego, and there's not somebody there with long boxes of comics to dig through, because a lot of the time, a lot of the buyers who go and buy comics off the back wall or something are not people who usually buy comics too, because you see a lot of people who are what they call window shoppers or observers in the comic world will go there because they like the movie or they like the video game and they love cosplay, and they'll go, oh, I really like X-Men. I love the X-Men movies, or, you know, or whatever. And they say, oh, here's some X-Men comics. And they'll get in. I've heard lots of stories of people who get into reading comic books because of whatever reason, but buy their first comics by going to a convention.
Yeah.
So,
well, and then they buy like an amazing book. Like if you watched Daredevil last year and then you fell in love with the Punisher character who made that season, and then you go to Comic-Con to San Diego or Emerald or whatever, and then all of a sudden there's Amazing Spider-Man 129, John, and there is the Punisher there for first appearance for $500, and you're like, I'm buying that, you know?
Yeah, people do that all the time.
I think that's great. I mean, it doesn't bother me when I meet somebody who is a novice collector and they have 20 books that are valued at 10 grand or more because they spent a ton of money. You know what I mean? And
good,
they don't really understand,
I mean,
what they have, but they have, you know, but it's like, that's awesome. That is awesome.
And they're excited about it, you know?
Yes, because then that'll get them into other things. And then especially if they're not CGC graded, or CBCS, which I have a love-hate relationship with that stuff.
me too.
You know what I mean? Because I like to read what I buy. I don't want to just have it in a case. But at the same time, it's cool that, you know, it'll get people like, now I want to know what's inside that thing. And they'll either they'll start reading the digital stuff. Mm-hmm. And any type of way people read the books and get into it, it's great. Because there's a lot, comics give you, there's a lot to there, you know. There's art, there's high art, not just like, it's not lowbrow art from, and I don't even know if there's such thing as lowbrow art. I mean, there's not. But it's not like you're walking down the street and somebody's spray painting a picture on the sidewalk and you're like, oh my God, I want to buy that. And they charge you $200, you know?
Right. No,
and you might get lucky and it might be a Basquiat that was happened to try to build his career and he started on the side of the street. You know what I mean? Most likely is not, you know?
Right,
but
exactly.
Comic books is a low barrier of entry for somebody into collecting an art that is on the level of Picasso on some of these guys, you know?
Yeah, well, we talk about guys like, you know, Strenko and stuff, who are just amazing visual artists. Like, you know, if you look at the Jim Strenko Nick Fury run from the 60s, and just look at those covers he did. They're
right.
insane. I mean, he had, you know, he has one cover that's, you know, in, I can't remember if it involves Salvador Dali, but or Dali inspired, but I think issue 7 of that series is very trippy on when you look at it. And it's like when I was in college, right, I took a lot of art classes because that's what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to draw. And I took a life drawing class, and we had a teacher who gave us an assignment to do. Our course long assignment for a life drawing class was to write a 10-page paper on a fine artist. And I was like, okay, this is a drawing class. You want us to write a paper, whatever. I can write papers. Like, no tomorrow. So I wanted to pick somebody in the comic book world because I love comics and I love comic book art. And I after narrowing it down, I was like, okay, I'm going to do my paper on Alex Ross, who, in my opinion, is a fine artist. He uses fine art skills. He uses all the things, but what he paints is superheroes for the most part. And this teacher told me in no uncertain terms that anybody who paints those silly comic characters could never be a fine artist. And I said, fuck you. And I dropped his class.
Yeah. That's somebody that's pretentious.
Yeah.
And he hasn't looked at what is out there in the comic industry at all.
No, he hasn't. It's people who have a predisposition to say, oh, comics are for kids. Comics are silly. And while comics are for kids in general, there's a lot more to them than just that. And just because you draw comics does not mean you're not a good artist or not a fine artist.
Is he going to say Lichtenstein is not a fine artist?
Right, exactly. Roy
Lichtenstein. I mean, get out of here.
Or Bernie Wrightson. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, or Bernie Wrightson or Mike Carell.
Yeah. Well, he was trying to tell me that making yourself a fine artist is more about the subject matter versus the skill involved. I'm like, that's not true. You're fucking dumb.
Yeah. Well, the subject matter can have big weight on it, but yeah. Are you telling me that Superman is not, will be long dead 3,000 years from now, they will still be making Superman stories,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, we're still telling stories about, you know, Hercules and those, and the Greek stories from way back then. So I mean, why wouldn't tell Superman? It's the same thing.
It is exactly the same thing, you know, and it's just kind of funny that somebody like that would be saying things that they don't understand. They don't understand if that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's shutting out a whole medium. What is that right. about?
Which is dumb.
It's like telling, it's, yeah, that's just, that pisses me off. Oh, you know who's going to be at the San Francisco? So Johnny's going to be at the San Francisco Comic Con.
In September.
And do you have a booth?
No, I don't have a booth. I'm just walking around.
You're just walking around. So yeah. Take a look, you know, keep an eye out for him. There's plenty of pictures of us up now on the stuff. So if you see Johnny, go say hi and tell him you want to be on the podcast or tell him you want to give a shout out.
I will have my equipment with. I'll have the lapel mics and stuff, and I'll be doing some interviews while I'm there.
I want to give you a couple comics that I want you to get signed because Bill Sienkiewicz is going to be there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that dude, nice. the paintings that he did for the covers of New Mutants.
I was going to say, he did some great New Mutants covers.
Oh, my God. They are amazing. Amazing. I mean, it's really the late 80s, early 90s. I think those are some of the best covers to come out across any company.
Didn't he do the Legion cover, the first Prince Legion?
The first appearance? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because that's part of – so from like – I think it's like 18 to 30 or something like that. I'm not quite sure on the range. He did all the covers, and they're all paintings. And they're all crazy awesome looking. Well, you're just like, what? You look at some of those and you tell me that guy does that that's not fine art.
Oh, yeah.
Like that you wouldn't pay up the ass to have the originals of those.
Oh, and people do. People do.
Yeah.
His stuff is fantastic. I love his work. It's just, it's so expressive.
Yeah, me too. He's one of my favorites to come out of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
He's really good. I mean, he's up there.
He's one of the ones out of the 70s, 80s who's, you know, still actively working, you know, into his later career here. You know, he was still putting out stuff every now and then over the last 10 years, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really good. So he's going to be there at the San Francisco Comic-Con. So if we can get together before you leave, I want to give you some New Mutant stuff to get signed.
Cool.
I don't think it'll cost that much.
Maybe I'll ask him if he want to come on the show for a minute.
You should. You should see if you can do an interview with him down there.
That'd be cool.
And, if you can get 20 minutes, that'd be amazing. If you get 5 minutes, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I'm happy for anything. If you say hi, I'd be happy. Hey, can I record you saying hi real quick?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen to Spoiler Country.
Yeah.
Just give me a thumbs up.
Speaking of that, going back into Comic-Con here real quick, we did a bunch of videos of people giving us basically what you call bumps for the show that
That's right.
I'm going to be editing into a supercut. for the YouTube channel here, hopefully next couple of days. And
yeah, I got to get you all the stuff that I have just to make sure that you have everything.
What's cool is we you and I set the goal of let's get 10, and then we told Kaylee, and she just went off and got a ton. She got so many. I don't know. I think she got more than 10 herself.
No, did she really?
Yeah, because she was asking everybody she stopped.
And, I got 10.
Yeah, she was asking everybody, every cosplayer she saw that she was talking to, she asked him to do it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was like part of her routine. She just asked, oh, yeah, can I get a picture? Oh, can you say this too?
Well, we started with the Batgirl, who was amazing. I was like, I got to get her to do this. So I just said, well, you'll do this. And she did it. And then, okay, now we got to get more. Because it was just fun. And I think my favorite one is the Batgirl, because that girl looked so good as Batgirl.
And she made her costume too. It's her and Batpool, a Deadpool with a bat symbol on, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But the only thing she didn't make is the cowl. But right, everything
those are hard.
Else
those are hard
was
to make.
Hers. Yeah. And then I think my other favorite one was the X-Men baseball team.
Yeah, that was cool.
And they did they all did it at the same time. It was good. It was a lot of fun. Some of them I don't think will be usable because it just wasn't loud enough. They weren't loud enough.
Right.
You know, but a lot of them are good. Yeah. Like the guy that was Hellboy looked amazing. Wasn't really very loud.
Right. Yeah, I know. So one of the things I didn't tell you is for this episode right here that I'm going to do.
Yeah.
People who are watching this on YouTube will already know this, but you're finding this out now. Is I shot a bunch of B-roll film at Comic-Con of us walking around, and that's going to be playing under on the video portion of us talking right now. So I'm going to have a bunch of all the pictures we took and all the video that I took playing underneath what we're talking about on the show. That way, it's a little more visual, so they can kind of see what we're talking about. I mean, what we're talking about right now is not going to match up with what they're seeing, but they're going to see all the stuff we shot and all the pictures we took. Yeah, so people watching will see pictures and see kind of the video what we took there. And I might actually, for the video portion, cut in some of those things. We just talked about some of those little bumps we had there every now and then. Yeah. Just kind of put them in this video, trying to kind of spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Maybe we can start using some of those bumps, too, for just like intros of episodes.
They'd have to be intros on the episode for the YouTube channel, not for the actual podcast. But yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Just having them say it is good too, you know. Like the girl that did the cami, she looked really good too.
She looked great. Yeah. One of the things I used to do, and I'll probably start doing again back in the day when I was doing Y2CR Radio, I'd have comic creators come on, and at the end of each recording, I'd say, "Hey, would you mind doing a bump for us? All I want you know here, just say you know you're listening to Y2CR Radio, and then do whatever you want." And I'd obviously have them say, "Oh, this is blank from blank, and you're listening to Y2CR Radio." And they'd always do something else funny on that. And I'd take those and I'd put those at the beginning of every episode after that. So each episode would start with a bump from somebody who was a creator back then, which I think is a cool idea. And it'd be cool to do that for Spoiler Country here. If we get like artists and creators and stuff from conventions to say that and give us little bumps to start shows with, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be great. So we talked about what we liked, and there was a lot to like. There's more of it too. What was your frustration there?
There's always
a frustration on a big festival like that.
Yeah, there's a couple. My biggest one was how they handled the center of the con and the big signings, because how the con was set up is all the big booths like Warner Brothers, Marvel, AMC, all those big companies were set up in the middle of the convention, obviously, because everyone has to walk through the middle of the show. So they want the most foot traffic.
Right. But
the problem with that is when they do those fucking signings where they have the cast of Justice League or the cast of Game of Thrones or the cast of whatever come out and talk or sign or show you something at those booths versus in a panel room, it's a fucking bum rush to that booth. And it becomes, you know, mob mentality, and everyone rushes in and the security guards like, keep it moving the whole time. I mean, we talked about this before a little bit, but it's like you're trying to walk and you're being yelled at to keep walking while you're trying to walk. And it's like, dude, I'm doing the best I can. I am walking. Yeah. Like nobody's stopping. And you're telling us to keep walking. And the reason why they want you to keep walking is because of two things. One, it's the fire marshal code. They don't want that many people standing still in a walkway. There has to be open walkways. And I get that. But it's also because over the years, the booths next to those places have complained saying, oh, when they do this, people line up and nobody can get to my booth. So they block off half the aisle, but then they don't let anybody walk in the other half. So nobody can get their booth, and the standing room, the walking room is cut in half. It's like, what's the point then?
Right. Right.
If you're not going to let people go to the booth, why block off half the aisle?
Right. And you got to understand the booth for like AMC or the booth for DC or the booth for Marvel, they weren't like a tiny booth like when you're walking down the aisle of a normal Comic-Con. They had like 4,000 square feet or more.
They're huge.
Yeah, they're huge areas with multiple booths inside their areas. And then what they would do is they would do the trailer for Justice League, and then they would bring out the whole cast.
Which is awesome, by the way. I watched it the other day. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks really good. But then they'd bring out the whole cast. And, of course, everybody in the place goes nuts, and they want to go get their signature, and they just want to see the stars, and they rush to that area, and it creates this huge mob-type mentality. And then you have the security guards who are not organized, were not trained well, and that's really what it comes down to. And really what they should, instead of yelling at people to keep moving, they should have been saying, hey, we got to keep it going, you know, take your picture, take your 2 seconds, and then get and then move on, you know, not yelling right at you like you're in, like you're a kid and you're being yelled at by the principal. I mean, well, it was ridiculous.
Every security guard, or even like the Netflix booth, there's people at the Netflix booth yelling at you to keep going. Like people who worked at Netflix, I'm like, what the, you work at Netflix, shut up.
It's, yeah.
Like, You could say keep moving, like you said. You can say it and be polite, but don't sound like you're annoyed that this is happening.
Yeah, you're
not
a drill sergeant.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know this is going to happen. You know if you bring out seven stars of Justice, or the stars of Justice League, all five of them or six of them, whatever many they bring. I don't know how many they brought. I think they brought out six of them. But you know if you do that, there's going to be a lot of people coming through. So don't treat these people like they're animals, like they're idiots. Right. You know, talk to them with respect. Like, hey, you know, we got to keep moving.
Your job is there because of all those people there. You right, have a exactly. job there that day because of all the people that are there.
Right.
And you should respect that. And, you know, and the thing is all the people, even when they were crowding, nobody was a jerk. Nobody was pushing somebody down or being rude. And I mean, there was times when somebody goes, we go to sit down to eat and they're like, hey, you want to share our table?
Yeah.
That's the kind of people that you get at the Comic-Con more than you get anything else. So I think that's what makes it doubly insane when you're getting yelled at by the security guard, is that almost everybody at the con that we met was extremely nice.
Yeah, they're there to have a good time. They want to enjoy that with people, make new friends, and be polite to people, which is what we experienced for the most part, besides, you know, some of the people who worked there. Like, yeah, like on Sunday when we bought food and wanted to sit down, wanted to just go find a wall to lean against and eat it real quick.
Yeah.
There was the Stan Lee line. They have all these cutouts that you can go into, and you know, you couldn't go walk into them because there were a line waiting area, and like, it's completely open.
They said it was because of the fire marshal and those were fire exits. But to me, I call BS, because as soon as you put a line in there, you've totally taken that out.
Right, exactly.
That's, you can't that, have the line doing. Extending into that area and then tell people they can't stand in there because of the fire marshal.
Right. It's double like, excuses.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that's just poor training. That's really what that was. And that was staff pro. And I'll call it out. That was staff pro. And that was poor training on their part. And the other thing that bugged me was the lack. It's like organized chaos, you know?
Yeah.
There's no real good organization going on. You don't know, like, just trying to find where is this room at? You know,
there's no maps
all over the place. Yeah, the people don't know. And I get that they have it on their programs and you can look on there and you should be able to figure it out on your own. But why do you have all these people sitting around not knowing anything? Hey, right. Where's the ATM at? I think it's down there, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, why hire a bunch of people and not know what they're talking about, not know what they're doing?
Yeah, and it really just comes down to poor training. I mean, really, that's what it comes down to. But other than that, I thought it was good. I think San Diego does things correctly. I think the city itself has a lot of organization going on. They understand. They have a lot of cops out, not to sit there and try to bust people, but just to try to keep traffic flowing right, to keep organization and order going on. And I thought they did a pretty excellent job. Like when I was on the train and I was walking across, I never felt like I was in danger of anything, you know.
Hats off to the San Diego Police Department and San Diego as a city in general for just taking what has become a giant event that's taking over all of downtown San Diego and making it one, feel safe. You could walk around and feel safe at there. And two, you know, for the most part, barring what we just talked about, for the most part, even with that many people there, it wasn't that bad. You could get from A to B and not take you hours and hours and hours because of all the people. They had things sectioned off well. I mean, as long as you walk the right direction, don't walk, you know, a half mile out the wrong way like we did the first day to cross a bridge. But,
yeah,
you know.
I think the San Diego city as a whole has embraced that whole culture and that embraced that whole movement. And I think it's great.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's one of the reasons why I love San Diego so much is because they've just taken this Comic-Con thing and they embrace it once a year. And I mean, I'm sure there are people I know there are people down there who probably fucking hate it. And that's fine. But for the most part, you go into a restaurant and that restaurant has converted itself into a comic dome. You know, there's comic stuff on the wall. They're embracing the culture. Like they have custom menus, say, oh, this is our, you know, comic book themed food and drinks. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. 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 And it's just catchy for them to try to get money in, but it's the fact that they're like, they know their audience and they're like, hey, come in, we're going to do whatever we need to do and have fun. And everybody there, the only thing, I wish their restaurants weren't so expensive. I mean, we averaged almost $100 a day. The first 2 days there, it was $100 a day for lunch for four people. Yeah. And that was ridiculous. I mean, and then you get the food and it's like, what? It's like, was this in the microwave?
Right. We went to the Hard Rock Cafe. Well, not it was at the Hard Rock Hotel, but it wasn't the cafe. It was some other like Mary Jane's, what it was called in the Hard Rock Hotel. And I ordered a chicken Caesar salad, which in all of my experience, a chicken Caesar salad has, you know, a grilled warm chicken on top of it. And it came with, you know, what was clearly chicken out of the fridge and not warmed up. And I was like, what? This is odd.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't bad, but I was like, I paid $20 for cold chicken on a salad. That's not, no.
Right. And I ordered a breakfast burrito, which is a tortilla, eggs, and some potatoes in there and some cheese. And it was $20. And it was like something that would probably cost you $3 to make. Literally.
Well, it was like the size of your burrito was like, it's like if you go buy the dollar breakfast burritos from McDonald's, it was like two or three of those.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right. It was crazy. But, you know, that's kind of to be expected. And then we smartened up and we started going to other places. We went to In-N-Out too many times.
It's good though.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I think it's a little overrated.
It People definitely like, is.
Freak out about it. And because I'm a lifelong Seattle guy and I don't think In-N-Out has anything on Dick's. I think they're like on par the same to me. You know?
You just love your bag of Dick's. I know.
Well, let's not be gross about it. But yeah, man. Dick's is good. Is good. And the thing with In-N-Out was it felt way over salted. And I even said that. It's really like, wow, this is really salty. And that's a sign of bad. Usually it's a sign of bad meat, but you have an allergy and you had no problems with In-N-Out. So that tells me that it's got decent meat.
Right. Here's the way that I compare it. Right. It is, if I go to a fast food place, In-N-Out's fast food, Dick's is fast food, you know, all that kind of stuff. I ate a burger there. Right. One, does it make me sick? Nope. Then I'm good. It's a better place for me. Two, does it taste better than McDonald's, Burger King, Jack in the Box, Wendy's, you know, the main four, right? And yeah, I think it definitely does taste better than those four. It's a better burger. So then it takes it up to another level to where, yeah, In-N-Out, it's a good place to go eat. Is it the best cheeseburger I've ever had? Absolutely not. But is it
for
a solid?
For the price, though?
Yeah.
I think it's all about the price, the convenience, and the type of restaurant. It's a fast food restaurant. Let's get it straight. You know? And I think all that combined, it's one of the best out there.
It really is. I understand why people are so all about In-N-Out because it is a very good burger.
You know what's
a
really good one? Next time you find yourself in the South, specifically Texas, go get a Whataburger.
Oh, I've had it. Oh, they're good.
Those are so good. Yeah, because you get an actual like big beefy burger. Yeah,
those burgers are huge.
Yeah, and they're good. So I don't know. I don't think that In-N-Out is any better than Dick's. I don't think Dick's is any better than In-N-Out. You know?
Well, I think if you get here's my opinion.
Well, maybe Dick's is a little bit more of a gut bomb than it In-N-Out was.
But if you get the regular Dick's cheeseburger and not the double Dick's cheeseburger, like the Dick's burgers without the double have too much bread to meat ratio, whereas I don't think the In-N-Out ones have that because they use. It's weird.
You just said the bread to meat ratio.
Well,
what was that from? It's got the great bread to meat. I think that was. I think that's Big Bang Theory. I think they have a whole thing about the bread to meat ratio.
of course they do. But I'm just saying, like, if you get the double burger at Dick's, it's the perfect, right? It's tasty. Right. You're not getting too much bread. But if you get the single cheeseburger, it's a lot of bread for how thin the meat is. And I think that's the one place that In-N-Out beats Dick's at. But if you compare the double cheeseburgers at both places, they're on par.
Hey, both of those places kick the shit out of White Castle. I know that.
Fuck White Castle, man. Fuck that place.
Yeah, and then if you grew up in Bremerton, then your gut bomb place was Crazy Eric's.
Oh, dude, there's something
good. There was something special about Crazy Eric's. It's probably the worst out of any of them out there.
the worst for you.
But it's just weird because you just drive up, and there's only one left, and you drive up to this tiny shack. But the thing is they've been open for over 50 years, and there's still an Erickson that works behind the grill. But they make really good shakes. That's one thing they do really well is the shakes.
They have those tortilla things they wrap hot dogs in.
What's that?
They have those like the cheesy hot dog bacon things they have. They wrap them up in the tortilla or some shit. It's fried. Those are just so just good.
All bad for you there.
So bad.
The bag of cheeseburgers for like $5 bucks.
Right.
You just get a sandwich bag full of cheeseburgers. Yeah.
I remember
there's a lot of overweight people in Bremerton, just so you know.
Right. Especially down in Navy Yard City. So like I don't like onions, right? I'm not a fan of onions. One of the reasons why I don't like White Castle burgers because everything's cooked in fucking onions and it tastes like shit. Right. But right. And their burgers are like they're terrible. But right. Crazy Eric's, you know, you go to the Kitsap County Fair, which I used to go to all the time in Kitsap, and Crazy Eric's always has a booth there, and they cook all their burgers in onions. So, I don't like onions, but what I like to do is I like to say, hey, cook it in onions, but don't give me the onions.
Right.
Because it comes out with such an awesome flavor with the onions and the cheese, but I don't like the actual taste of actual onions on a burger.
You like the hint of it.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't mind onions cooked with things. So that's like, that's
like me with green pepper. That's like me with bell pepper. I feel like bell pepper takes over anything that you're eating. So if you get pizza with bell pepper or anything, you know, and most of the time people cook with too much of it and it's just, that's all I taste. But if they take all the bell pepper, they cook with it and then the bell pepper is not in it in the actual meal, then it's like, okay, I can taste it, but it's like a nice subtle flavor as opposed to this overbearing flavor.
Yeah. When I make fajitas, I cook with bell peppers, but I don't eat them.
So bottom line is In-N-Out was a good place to go for us to eat on the cheap. Because it was so, I mean, $20 for us to feed all of us, basically.
With shakes.
Yeah. Well, I didn't do the shakes like you guys did, because I like shakes, but I really need to lose. I need to lose like 50 pounds for my health. So
yeah, me too.
I'm trying to avoid some more things. And In-N-Out's probably not the best thing, but when you're traveling and you're on the road, it's kind of hard to, you know.
Wait. Two guys who are overweight doing a comic book podcast? No way.
I know, right? That can't be happening. The food was really expensive. We figured it out by going to different places. And then we started going to the grocery store as well, which was the best thing.
Saved a lot of money there.
I got a lot of just fruit, which was good. And then Kaylee ate all my fruit, but that's okay. Because she's my niece. And I don't mind taking care of my niece. We tried to do some other things, but we really just... It was all busy. About the con. Yeah.
We were so busy with the con, with interviews, with getting to booths. And then after the con, we'd come home and, you know, record more of the podcast. Then I would edit it. And by the time I was done, you know, it was like midnight, 1, 2 in the morning, trying to get everything up. My laptop just doesn't have Movie Maker on it. So I had to like remote into Seattle to my computer to make the YouTube video, which was a pain in the ass.
And the reason why we use Movie Maker, so if anybody is a video snob out there, is because when you're adding a picture to the audio just for... to upload to YouTube so you have a picture on there. Movie Maker seems to be the fastest one out there.
And if you're doing just a picture to audio, who gives a shit?
Yeah, right. We've tried, because you use some professional stuff too.
Yeah.
And that one took like 4 hours just to compress a 45 minute.
Right.
Just to meld a picture to a 45 minute audio, where Movie Maker does it literally in like less than five minutes.
That's amazing. I mean, it's like the Mike Groen interview. I use the actual program that I have, Pinnacle Studio, to make that versus MovieMaker. But for like just making a picture and audio, MovieMaker is so much faster.
Yeah, yeah. Because we don't need it to be high def.
I don't care about a high def picture. Who cares?
Right.
But the other thing I was going to say, because I mentioned earlier when we were talking about, you know, downsides of the con, I said there was two things. So one was the we talked about with the crowds and stuff. And two was, it's very similar, but the same thing. But like, I also don't think they should do those that type of stuff on the main floor, because it creates that mob mentality, and it does create an environment where people like me who have like...
You're talking about the trailer previews and bringing out the cast and doing cast signings.
Right. I don't think those should be on the main floor specifically because you have people like me who have, you know, crowd anxiety. So yeah, so I'm talking about, you know, when they have the signings. So I don't think they should do that. The signings are the big, maybe the trailers. I mean, that's the trailers are fine because that brings a different crowd and a different type of excitement. But when they have all the stars come out, like the Game of Thrones people or the Justice League or the Avengers, whatever.
The Game of Thrones was the craziest one.
Right. But they bring them out and they bring them out to where, I mean, I know why they do it, because it's marketing and it gets attention, but they bring them out and they are facing the aisle with other booths on the other side of them and a big walkway. It causes that chaos. And for people like me who have, you know, a little bit of, you know, crowding social anxiety, I feel awkward and very tense in those situations. It's, you know, I mean, obviously you would say if you have those situations, don't go to Comic-Con, but still, you know, it creates this mob mentality we talked about, and it creates this awkwardness and this chaos that I think if they had said, hey, you know, we're doing a signing with these people up on the booth. Because, I mean, I don't know why they do it right there anyways, because to get a signing from them, you have to already have a ticket for it or right. be involved in it somehow. So there's no reason for them to do it there besides just to show it off, right?
Which, right. Well, but, I mean, the con is big enough. The convention center is big enough. You have a lot of rooms that you can do that in. Well, you know, you can still build excitement and not do it on the exhibition hall where everybody's walking around. And it's like, why would you do that here?
Well, they're doing it so someone can walk up and go, oh, look, it's Ben Affleck or it's that one girl from Game of Thrones. I don't know who they are. I don't watch Game of Thrones. But, you know, and you're trying to get a selfie or a picture, hold up their phone and get a picture of them or whatever, you know. And that's why they do it. But I remember back at Comic-Con, like 04 or 06 when I was there, whenever The Grudge came out with Sarah Michelle Gellar. And yeah. They did something similar to, you know, you could get a raffle or get a ticket and you got a signing with you know, with the director and the stars movies. But it wasn't on the floor. It was like, okay, you've got this ticket. Everyone knows this is going to happen. We showed the trailer. Now go to, you know, room 21B and we'll file you guys in. And they did a line where you go through and you meet everybody and you got it signed and got it on your way out.
Right.
So it wasn't taking up space downstairs. Wasn't causing chaos. It was upstairs. You know, I got to meet Sarah Michelle Gellar and the cast of that movie and, you know, say, hey, it's okay. I'd love to work on Buffy, whatever, you know, because I did. And get the poster signed.
You're proud, man. You don't say whatever. You loved that show.
I do. I love Angel more. I love Angel more, the show Angel. But
because you're gay for Angel.
A little bit. But you know, they did it that way, and it was great. But I understand they're doing it on the main floor because that causes more buzz. More, oh, look, they brought the cast on the main floor, whatever. But
falsehood, though. It's not needed by any stretch of the imagination. You're not adding anything to the experience of San Diego Comic-Con by doing that.
Well, what you're adding is there are people out there who like they want just look. I took a picture of Sam and Dean from Supernatural or whatever, and it's like, that's great.
So what?
But I mean, that's us. We're like, so what? I mean,
saying for the organization and to keep the crowds happy and to keep the flow going, that right. should not be a reason to do it that way. When it comes to the trailers, make it on a huge screen that the whole exhibition hall can see at once. So no one's having to rush all the way to DC just to see the Justice League trailer when they're in a 4,000 square foot booth that can only house a few, you know, 1,000 people, but you got 60,000 people trying to get in there.
You know, that's a good idea.
If you put it up on a big screen that the whole convention hall can see, then you're reaching everybody, and two, you're not having to have that whole thing. And then after that, say, come meet the stars in room blah, 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 and this is how you get there. And then you're done, and then you don't have this whole issue. It's ridiculous. And why are you – and you know what? I'm going to get on a freaking soapbox. Why the hell are you having lines start in the convention hall? What the fuck are you thinking? Go outside or have them out in the areas that can actually have that many people sitting there in line. If you want to be the idiot that sits in line for 5 hours to go meet some Ben Affleck, then whatever. Go sit in line for 5 hours. Yeah, but why have that line go straight through the convention hall? How stupid is that?
Right. No, I agree completely. And like for a center, and they have all those on the back wall of the con, the entire walls are like line waiting areas. You know, you can't stand on, you can't lean against, but it's like you have this convention center, this convention that has, you know, 60 to 100 more thousand people going to it. And they have literally two fucking places with tables to sit at. And they're not very big. There's like 20 tables maybe in each section. That's not enough for that many
people. Not even that. That one section, there was five tables.
It's like, so you give us little tables for everybody the show to sit at. You know, some people have, you know, some people with broken feet have to stop and sit for a minute sometimes, but there's no places to sit. You're not allowing people to lean against or sit on the back wall and like eat their food or take a break because you want them. Everybody has to be clear. So people have to like find other areas to stop, or like luckily, you know, we have friends there who have booths, so we could go sit at their booth for a little bit. And that was a godsend for us. But not everybody has that. Not everybody knows somebody who's there who has a booth, you know?
Right. That's right. And most people don't.
Right. Most people don't. And the only reason why we do is because I've been doing the comics for so long on the other side that I just happen to know people who are more established than me and have booths there.
Yeah. Guess who just Facebooked IME was Dennis Karen.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Corvink.
Yeah. Corvink Inc. Right.
We recorded an episode of YTCR Radio last night, and we actually talked about him because I wanted to buy his Save the Planet or Save the Environment, Kill Yourself shirt. And
yeah.
I forgot to buy one, so I'm going to have to order one from him off his website because I really want that
really
shirt.
Yeah, really nice guy. Goes to a lot of the cons. He'll be at Emerald City this April. He'll be back at San Diego. He does the – I think he just says he does the L.A. one even though that one's not
– He refuses to do L.A. Comic Con.
Oh, that's what it was. He did it once. He's done it in the past, but he doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I've known him for a while.
Go check out his – when you see him, look for Corvink, Corvink.
Yeah. You can't miss it. His booth always has super tall banners going way up in the sky. And he has
yellow and black.
He has this class hole thing. You can get a degree in douchebaggery or a degree in dank memes. And they're pretty cool stuff. He has some awesome stuff.
He's a funny guy, and he's got some funny stuff. And yeah, go check it out. Go buy some shirts from him.
Yeah, he let us crash at his booth a couple times. We were tired. That was great.
Oh, that was really nice. And Jeff Schutze?
Jeff Schutze from Jeff Schutze. Bot also did the same thing. He was great too.
Yeah, really good guy. Really nice guy. Check out Jeff Bot. That's a good comic.
Yep, JeffBot.com. Very well. One F.
Yeah, JeffBot.com.
But yeah, most people don't have friends that have booths there, so they can't just go sit by in someone's booth and sit for 10 minutes or whatever. So I think one of the things they should do is, have the lines outside. Have the lines outside of the main convention hall, because we found out that one of the best ways to get from point A to point B, if you had to walk through the middle, was to actually leave the con, walk outside, then go back in.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have to do that.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. So, and really, I think that whole exhibition hall area... I don't know, man. I struggle back and forth because I don't know that it might be overcrowded or nobody would, you know, or they would lose a lot of money. But why I still don't understand why you have to pay to get into that exhibition hall.
Right.
Going to the mall and you walk to the door and they're like, it's $20 to get in.
You mentioned that before. And I've been thinking about that for the last week. And here's kind of where I've come to with that.
Yeah.
While I agree you shouldn't have to pay to go shopping, and that's bullshit, it's your tickets for more than just that. Your tickets for more of an experience, for more of all the other things that happen at Comic-Con versus just going in to go shopping. Because most people go to Comic-Con for the studio booths, for the big name stuff, to go to the events, to go to all the outside stuff, to go to all the extra stuff that you can't go to normally unless you go to Comic-Con. You know, there's the panels. You can't, you know, and you could say, okay, well, separate the comic stuff and the people who are selling stuff from the other stuff. But then most people are going to go to the other stuff and not go to the comic stuff. I think separating them would actually hurt the smaller dealers a lot. And
yeah, I agree with that.
It's hard.
That's why I'm always back and forth about it too, because I get it, but at the same time, I think I just get irritated because we're going in and I spent way more money than I thought I did.
Oh, yeah. You always do.
And I'm pissed off at myself because I kind of put myself in a hole because of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Me too.
And it's just irritating because you pay all this money to get there. You pay all this money to have the right to go. Even though we got lucky. I mean, we still had to do some things to get the extra ticket. for you. Yeah. You know? And so it was, it's the whole thing is always difficult to sit there and go, oh yeah, you know, I paid all this money and then I bought all this stuff and I still don't, you know, I think for you and I, it's a little different because we had an experience. We got to meet people and we got to interview people and we got to do some different things that, and we got to be a part of the con that 99% of the people, 99.9% of the people that are there don't get to experience. Like, right. Meeting Robert Kirkman in a very intimate setting and having drinks and you
that
know,
was awesome.
And then and going up and checking out the whole Diamond Vendor Appreciation Luncheon and having all the different industry leaders in the publishing come in and tell us about all the new stuff coming in and what they're going to do to bring people in for comic book stores and other things like that. And it was neat. It was a side of the industry that as a collector and as a reader, I never get to see.
Right.
And so it was really, really cool. And it was, you know, it was an interesting thing to witness. So for us, I think it was different for us.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads into a question I wanted to ask. And we talked about a little bit on outside of the show is Comic-Con worth it? Is going to San Diego Comic-Con worth the money it's inevitably going to cost you to spend? And I think that and I've been thinking about that for a week now. And I think the answer to that question is very subjective as to why you're going or what you're going to Comic-Con for.
Yeah.
If you're going to Comic-Con to buy comics, unless you're going to buy some really big comics, and even then, it's probably still not worth it because
any comic if all you're doing Comic-Con, is looking at comic books, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Because if you, any comic you're going to buy there, with the exception of some of the the big five, you can get at any other local con or eBay. At any local shop or eBay or online and save a lot less money because you're going to be all the traveling costs, all the hotel costs, the food costs. It's not going to be worth it. Now, if you want to go there and compare copies of Action One, which there's only like maybe one at the show because there's never a lot there because it's a rare book, or like you want to go buy an Amazing Fantasy 15, you want to go look at lots of them. Yeah, you can go to the San Diego Comic Con and look at lots of them there. But you have to remember that if you're going to San Diego Comic Con to buy a big name comic book, you're going to overpay for it. Like,
because
the prices are marked up.
I mean, just by example, talking about markup, which was the book that was it Warlord number one?
First issue special number eight.
Yes, first issue special number eight was you got it for $6.
Yeah.
And then the booth literally right next door wanted $53.
Just because Mike Grell was there. That's insane.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt. So, right. But you're right. I think if you're just going there, you only have one goal in mind, and that's to look at comic books, then it's not worth it. But if you're going to go, but if you're a collector and you're a collector of many things, or if you're somebody that buys and sells, you try to, you go out there and you hunt and you find that one thing and then you sell it like on eBay or whatever, then I think it is worth it because you can find that gem or you can find that exclusive. And if you can get the exclusive and then you can turn around and that pays for your whole con.
I can take from experience that if you go there as a dealer or somebody who wants to buy and sell stuff, going for exclusives, going box digging to find that gem in a box, you can definitely make your money out of it because we have definitely done that before in the past where I've gone down there and, bought stuff, exclusives, and made all of our money back.
We got stuff this time that we could probably all sell everything and we'd probably make our money back. Like if we put everything together that we did, sold it, and then split the money, we'd have – everything would be good. We would make up everything that we did.
Exactly. Yeah. And the problem with that is getting us to actually sell them because we like comic books, but
that's right.
Well, we'll sell, I mean, we're going to definitely sell some of it because someone's like, oh, I don't really care about this, but I'm talking about, is it worth it? You know, if you're going down there for exclusives and for stuff you can make money on, you're going to make, if you go down there with money and buy the right things, you're going to make a ton of money back. I was talking to, Kyle from Cryptozoic, and he was saying that his buddy goes down there and does nothing but wait in line for exclusives, and he'll make way more than his normal monthly salary back on just reselling those exclusives right away. So
yeah, it's a lot of waiting though, but that's a lot of work. That's not
it is. It's, you know, it's
don't,
not easy.
Don't think that it's just going down there and you're having fun and you're at Comic-Con. It's not. It's getting up at 5 a.m. and getting there.
Oh yeah, at 6,
and then you're literally waiting in line for hours.
Yeah.
Hours. I mean, there's people waiting in line for those stupid pop heads for over 24 hours.
That's ridiculous.
You know,
that is one thing I wish they would do. Kind of changing subjects just for real quick, like the Hall H stuff, right? Hall H is where they show the big Comic-Con panels, they show the big trailers and stuff like that, and it's in a giant hall that holds 6,600 people, and it's cool. Like I've been in a Hall H before, and it is an experience, and it is very cool. And a lot of people go to Comic-Con just to go to Hall H, but the problem is like people go to Comic-Con and they'll sit in line starting on like Thursday night, and they'll wait until Saturday morning to get into Hall H, and it's like you're wasting 2 days to go to Hall H. What the hell?
Yeah. Now,
I heard a rumor. Maybe not a rumor, but I heard something while we were down there that they were giving out each night. They would give out like a certain number of tickets, so you wouldn't have to wait overnight. I didn't actually see that happen. I don't know if that actually happened, but if that did happen, that's a different story. You know, if you go wait in line out, say at like 9 o'clock, they come out and say, okay, you know, the first 1,000 people in line are guaranteed a spot in Hall H, and they can go home and sleep. Perfect. That kind of solves that waiting for 48-hour thing to go see a trailer, but. I still can't imagine myself waiting in line for more than like an hour to go sit in Hall H just because I'm impatient and I just don't care that much.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm too impatient to wait in line that long. I don't care about seeing trailers that I'll either see on the following Monday on YouTube.
And they're all online.
Yeah. Yeah, or if I don't see them, I don't really care because the movie will eventually come out and there'll be other trailers that'll come out for that trailer. I mean, for that movie. So it doesn't bother me to see it or not. And it's not like I get to go and you know, we talked about this before, meeting certain comic artists is a big deal for us, but really, like if I met Batfleck, I would be excited if I can go and shake his hand and maybe get a signature, but at the same time, it's not like we're going to be buddies. It's not like we're going to go have a beer. So I don't really care, you know, it's a different world. And if I, you know, the thing is, the difference with me for like meeting a Mike Grell or Andy Kruber or even a Bill Sienkiewicz or anybody else, there's a good chance that you're sitting there talking to them and going through that you might go, hey, want to go have a beer? Oh, yeah, let's go do it.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know,
you can become friends with those people because they're much more accessible and they're much more they're down to earth human beings. That's what it comes down to. You know, exactly. Hollywood people tend to have a huge inflated ego that don't make any sense because you're not saving anybody's life. Not one person's life is going to change if Ben Affleck or Matt Damon or Brad Pitt or Charlize Theron dies today. Not one person. People will be
kids.
Sad.
They're kids.
You know, well, yeah, but that's different. Okay. Yeah. You know what I'm freaking saying? You're not saving anybody's life. You know, there's no reason to have an ego. Your hand is not on anybody's heart, making sure that it's beating. So it's hard for me to sit there and get excited about somebody that doesn't make a difference in my life in any way, you know?
Right.
And then one that feels like they're better than, and I don't know if they feel that way, you know, because I don't know any movie stars. I don't know if they feel better that they're better than anybody, but that's the portrayal that is given to me from their public persona.
Right.
You know? Like, stop the name dropping and calling out what you're wearing and everything else. I mean, some of it is all about publicity and making money because they get paid every time they say they're wearing Gucci loafers.
Whatever.
And I get it. I mean, hey, Gucci freaking signed me to say, hey, every time you say Gucci loafer on your podcast, we give you $100. I'd be saying it 8 times a freaking podcast.
Just drop it as much. I would too. I can't blame him for that. But yeah, I can't blame him for that.
But I just don't care because I'm not in a world that they're going to be my friend or I'm in need and they're going to help me out.
Well, I think the difference really is, I think this is what it comes down to, is the difference is more than that for us and should be for most people who are fans of the creative process is I'm more interested in talking to the people who make things like the writers, the artists, the developers, the designers versus a person who just portrays somebody else's work. Now, actors are great. Actors have great ideas. You know, I don't want to discredit the amount of talent it takes to be a great actor because it definitely does. But would I rather go hang out with Ben Affleck, who's going to start in the Batman, or would I rather go hang out with the guy who wrote that script?
Right.
I'd rather talk to the writers or the cinematographer or the director.
Me, Ben Affleck's a bad example though because he does write, he does direct, he does create beyond just acting. Right. But yeah, I get what
he's good at it. And he's really good at it too. Yeah, it's a bad example, but in general.
but don't get me wrong. It's not that I wouldn't get giddy and be a total fanboy if I met. And I think right now for me, I love Ben Affleck as Batman.
I always have. I've always loved
Affleck. I think he's amazing. I really do. I think he's, for my money right now, he's been the best so far.
Oh, definitely.
And I know a lot of people are like, oh, Christian Bale. And I just, I don't know, man. There's a part of me that feels like there was a big push on Harry Potter to have all the actors be English.
Right. Right.
And nobody be American on the Harry Potter movies. And a part of me is like, I kind of want that for my superheroes that are American.
Right.
Well, and I like the fact that Ben Affleck is from Boston and he's like, you know, worked his way up to that point. And it's just, it just feels right with him being Batman.
It does. And the problem, my biggest, I think Christian Bale was fine. He was a fine yeah. Batman. He was a fine Bruce Wayne. But my thing was, is if you really,
and he has a flawless American accent.
He does. But if you look at the core of those movies, of those three movies he's in, those movies aren't about Batman at all. Those movies are about the villains in the movie with Batman there. And that's very telling. And you watch all three of them. Those movies are about the journey of the villain and getting and that, which is great, which is what makes The Dark Knight so great, is The Dark Knight is really a Joker movie with Batman in it. And
so done so well, though.
It's done great. I mean, it's an amazing movie, but like, you can't, it's hard to compare it because while Batman's the main character in it, is the core of the movie isn't about Batman, you know, right. And it's done so well and it's done so perfectly that a lot of people miss that. So it's hard to say, oh, Christian Bale was the best Batman. I mean, he was really, really good. However, I think when you first see Ben Affleck as Batman, it's like, oh, well, one, he looks more like the comic book Batman. And he's huge.
Did you see how big he was in,
oh, I know.
In BVS? It was like, holy crap, dude.
Right. And he's so good at both Batman and Bruce Wayne. I think he pulls out Bruce Wayne really well.
He's a believable Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. He's a flawed character, whereas I think Bale's character was his flaws were more forced, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because Michael Keaton was such a surprise as Batman.
Oh, yeah. Right? He was so good.
Yeah, he was so good. And I think what I liked about Michael Keaton was not him in the Batman suit, more as him as Bruce Wayne.
Oh, he was definitely a better Bruce Wayne than Batman. But I think what's great is we have these various Batman actors, and I think what's the best part about them is the fact that each Batman actor we have took the character a different way, made it their own. You can't say that Bale was trying to be Keaton, or that, you know, Val Kilmer was trying to be Keaton or whatever, or Clooney was trying to be Val Kilmer. They all took the role, and each Batman has its own set of what it does, and they're all a little different. So you can easily pull good things and bad things from each Batman, and they're not trying to mimic each other, which is, I think, if they were trying to, like, if Batfleck was trying to mimic Bale, it would have been a huge fail.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I mean, I don't, it's funny that you mentioned Kilmer and Clooney, because those are all part of the Joel Schumacher films, and I don't count those as being Batman films. Because why are you taking a dramatic director that does drama really well, and that's what he's known for, and you have him do Batman, and I thought those movies were shit, dude. I could not handle them at all. As soon as that first one that he did, I was done. I was like, nope. And then when we watched him, I thought it was a mockery of what Tim Burton had started. I really did. I thought it was disgusting.
We're very different, because I loved Batman Forever. I was also like 12 or 13 when it came out. And I thought I was already in
my 20s. They were shit, dude. The only redeeming quality out of all the Joel Schumacher films was Jim Carrey as the Riddler. That was it. Everything else was crap.
I thought Jim Carrey was great.
Why are you putting nipples on the Batman suit? Get the fuck out of here.
Hey, that was the Clooney Batman. That was Batman and Robin.
It doesn't matter. It's all Joel Schumacher. He did that. That guy's a piece of crap for doing that, man. He should be shot. He shouldn't be allowed. He's a great director. Don't get me wrong. A Time to Kill, amazing film with Matthew McConaughey. And he's got a bunch of other ones, too. And that guy, as a dramatic force, amazing. But he ruined that franchise, ruined it. Tim Burton had that thing going in a direction that you never would have needed what Chris Nolan did. You wouldn't need that, because they were so freaking good. And then this guy takes over and he just makes a mockery of what it was. And he makes it like, oh, well, I wanted to bring the camp back in it. Fuck you. That's not what Batman is. No. You know, Batman 66 on TV was a completely different beast and written differently and was a different genre altogether.
It was.
Right? That made sense. Adam West, Richard Ward, all those guys were great. You know what I mean? And it was a fun TV show. That's not what those movies were. Those movies were supposed to be more like what the comic books are. Dark, gritty, and what Batman was. So you can like watch it and go, oh my God, and feel what was going on. And Tim Burton got that right in the first one. And his Catwoman portrayal in the second one was ridiculous. And Joel Schumacher fucked that thing up. It was ridiculous. Oh, I wanted to strangle him watching those movies, dude. Because to me, dude, I was 15 when Batman came out with Michael Keaton. That was it, man. That was my favorite movie. That was the best movie ever. And then to see that crap come out afterwards, I was so angry. I was like,
I would choke
you out. Oh, yeah, because I think that he totally messed that whole thing up. And then it took him, 10 years to come out with another Batman movie because he did it. He did such a bad job on him. Nobody wanted to do a Batman movie.
Well, no, it wasn't 10 years. It was 97 to 02. Batman Robin came out in 97, and then I think Batman Begins came out in
02. It felt like 20 years, dude. It felt like 20 years.
It felt like a long time, but it was really only about 5 years. But, I mean, so I was a kid. I was 8 years younger than you are, so I was younger. So when Batman Forever came out, I thought it was great because I loved Jim Carrey in it. I didn't think it was, as good of a movie as like Batman Returns. Batman Returns was my favorite movie when it came out because I love the portrayal of Catwoman. I love the portrayal of the Penguin. I thought Danny DeVito was amazing as a Penguin.
He was great.
And I love that movie. And then, because when the first Batman, Batman came out in 89, I was 7 years old. So I don't really remember seeing it in theaters, but I remember seeing Batman Returns. But when Batman and Robin came out in 97, I was in high school and I actually went and saw it because my buddy Jeff and I were walking around Silverdale all the time after school because we had nothing else to do. And we would go to the movie theaters. I actually saw Batman and Robin in theaters like 4 times just because we were bored and nothing else to do. I'm not saying it's a good movie. It's not a good movie. It's entertaining and it's fun.
The thing is, but you have a different look on it. It's more nostalgic for you.
Right,
exactly. And so that's, and I can't fault you for that. You love it, you love it. I just think that Joel Schumacher is a piece of crap for what he did to that franchise. He ruined that franchise.
You got to throw John Peters in that too. Not John Peters. Yeah, John Peters, the producer guy in that as well, because he had a big part of that too.
Whatever. The director can say no.
Right.
Say, this is my movie. And then you say, F you, fire me if you don't want me to do with this. Yeah, because that movie in 1989, right, was the movie that really got me into Batman. Right.
Yeah.
So Mark Shoemaker lived up the street. His older brother, David, and his girlfriend made us Batman shirts.
Nice.
Right. They actually had them made for us. And then we all went to the theater and we saw Batman and we all had our Batman T-shirts on and everything. And it was, and then this movie opened up and you're like blown away. No one at that point had made a superhero movie that was dark like that. And that was like felt as unattainable and as crazy as it sounds, felt more real than any other superhero movie that you'd ever seen before.
Well, that dark and that mainstream too, because that was that was a big deal when it came out. That movie was a huge deal.
Yeah, and Tim Burton just hit the mark on everything on that movie. It was so awesome. You watch it now, it's a little dated, but for the time, man, it was just it was so good. And then a couple years later, 3 years later or whatever, Batman Return comes out and you see Michelle Pfeiffer just painted into that Catwoman uniform. And you're just like, oh, my God. And she's just so good and crazy and just, and Penguin is just scary in a weird way. You know what I mean? He's not, I don't know. It's just everything just works so well. And then Burton leaves the franchise and you're excited for, was it Batman and Robin's the next one? Or is it Batman Forever? I can't remember
Batman
which
Forever
one.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you're excited for the franchise, and you think it's going to be this cool thing, and then it's just a big turd. And you're just like, what is going on? Now you've made a mockery of what came before you, and you try to bring in the TV show. That's basically what you've done, and Batman's not that TV show. That's not what Batman is.
No, it's not.
And it just ruined it. It was like, now this whole thing sucks. And it's just, I don't know, man. I was so pissed off, dude. I was so, because I loved it so much. I was, oh my God. Oh my God.
Well, yeah, you spent the last 10 minutes.
And I worked in a video store, and I had to see that stupid cover box every day and see that crappy movie, and they'd make us play it on the thing. And I was just like, and I, you know, I'm collecting. I mean, I just stopped collecting comic books at the time. And that's one of the reasons I stopped, was things like this was coming out, and it was just a joke. And it was like, this guy, it felt like the guy didn't even like Batman, that he was just like, I'm just going to throw this together. And, you know, you might as well have Adam West play Batman in those movies.
I mean, they'd be
and
better that
wear
way.
That freaking leotard costume, which I'm sure there's a lot of people that are in their 60s and 50s that would love that. But right. That would be a joke for what that movies were supposed to be, what was set up before. I would not have a problem, dude, if they were a reboot of that Batman franchise. Right. If Joel Schumacher did it and he did a reboot and this is the style he was going with and he was going in, I wouldn't have had a problem. But that's not what it was. It was a continuation of what Burton had already built. And I felt like he ruined Burton's movie.
Right. It ruins the franchise because you got these two movies that don't fit at all, like stylistically or anything about them. They don't fit to the first two.
Clooney should have been a good Batman. Clooney could have been a great Batman in a Burton film or even in a Chris Nolan film.
So hold on. Now, think about Batman and Robin if you've seen it recently, or go watch it again and just.
I'm not watching that, dude.
All right, but
I'm not watching that. Okay, it'll just piss me off all over again.
I argue this fact all the time. If you just look at George Clooney's performance as Batman and Bruce Wayne, and note the things in it that are obviously bad direction by the director and writing, and look at his performance. He was a good Batman and a good Bruce Wayne. He was just in a really shitty movie. And
yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I just said, though, right? I'm saying Clooney in a Burton film for Batman, probably be amazing. Clooney in a Nolan film for Batman, probably be amazing. Matter of fact, they could bring Clooney back now and do The Dark Knight, and he'd probably be amazing.
That'd be cool. Like the actual Dark Knight, not just, you know, just throw it into a movie with Batman v Superman.
Yeah, just do it. Just do an offshoot. You know, it has nothing to do with whatever Justice League and whatever they're doing now with Batfleck. But do a Dark Knight and have Clooney as the Batman. That would be ridiculously awesome.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
I'd watch that twice.
I'd watch it three times. Fuck you.
Yeah, there you go. those old Batman movies made me so mad, dude. It really did. And yeah, because. Maybe it's just because of how old I was and how invested I got. I saw Batman in a theater, dude, no less than 10 times.
Dang.
Because it played at Redwood Plaza. And so I grew up on Pine Road, and it was a quarter mile from my house to the movie theater. So I would just walk down there. And it cost me like $2.75 to go see it during the day.
Yeah, it was great.
So I'd go down there and see it. I gave them pounds of flesh for that movie. You know what I mean?
That's an odd term. Pounds of flesh.
Well, you know, you pound of flesh, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I saw it a bunch of times. And then Batman Returns was the same thing. I saw it a bunch of times in the theater because I lived right down the street and I loved it. And then, so for me, I was excited to see the next evolution of what they're going to do. Two-Face, I'm expecting Billy Dee Williams. And all of a sudden, it's Tommy Lee Jones.
Over the top, Tommy Lee Jones. And
just like, love Tommy Lee Jones and some of the other movies he's in. And
Men in what's Black, The Fugitive.
The Fugitive and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, but Men in Black hadn't been out yet by this time. But, you know, but it's like, that's not Billy Dee Williams. What? What is this?
Well, that was the annoying thing, too, is because like in the Burton verse, that in the original part, they set up Billy Dee Williams to be Two-Face, which would be great. I love Billy Dee Williams, and it's already set up. And they actually hired Marlon Wayans to be Robin and paid him to be Robin in those movies, but never actually cast him to do anything because he was cast and paid in this weird time frame between movies. And then by the time they made the movie, they made a change to not use him, but he still got paid for the role. And I actually think
that would have been interesting.
I actually think in that universe, he would have been a good choice for Robin because, you know, he's shown.
No, he's funny. He's funny.
He's great, but he has shown in other movies that he can do serious as well. And yeah. I think he could have fit that, you know, that Dick Grayson aspect really well. That, you know, he's agile, he's athletic, he's funny, but can also be serious. All the things Dick Grayson was, because Dick Grayson was like Batman, but more had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I still think Marlon Wayans would have been great in that. But we spent like 30 minutes talking about the Batman movies.
Yeah, because those ones right there. That I was so hesitant to see the Chris Nolan, the Batman Begins. And you have no idea how much joy I had watching that movie and seeing that he had brought it back to what a Batman movie should. If you're going to go camp, go full camp. I get it. You know what I mean? Because you have a huge audience that love the Batman TV show. I wasn't one of those guys. You know, it was on TV. It was funny. I watched it from time to time on the reruns, obviously.
Yeah.
But I was never a big fan of the Batman TV show.
You know, I wasn't either. I enjoyed it for what it was. But for me, it was always like,
it was just a little past our time.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I remember watching the Batman movie over and over again, and the Batman movie with the shark spray and stuff. I mean, it's funny. It's campy. I enjoyed that. And then I'd go back and try and watch the TV show, and I'd watch like the first four or five episodes, and I'd get bored. And
that's just not too much.
And that's not to say anything negative about that show, because that show definitely was what it was, and was, you know, a
huge audience, man. They're doing that Batman 66 comic, man, and it's doing pretty well. So
I don't want to dog on people who love that show. It just wasn't something that I was dig into. Right. I enjoy what came out of that show. Like, I love the artwork and this and the other stuff that comes out of what that show was, and how that show helped bring Batman to the mainstream to allow people to do stuff like Tim Burton's movie. Because you know, you think of it, if you didn't have that 66 show to bring Batman mainstream in the 60s, which then brought Batman to be a more darker character in the 70s and 80s when people start taking him seriously, that Burton movie probably wouldn't have happened.
Right. And
I recognize that. It wasn't a show that I was really interested in, because one, it's campy. It's you know, not the Batman I read as a kid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a crazy show. We started off talking about San Diego Comic-Con. I think we both loved it. I think it's on an individual basis, whether it's worth going to the show, because the money that you spend,
it's what you're going for.
I would definitely go to. Yeah. It's what you're going for. Have fun with it. You know, don't try to take it too seriously. If you're going to go there and try to work it and try to get certain exclusivities, you might not get all the ones you want. You'll probably get a lot of them, but you might not get all the ones you want. Just be aware of that. You're going to stand in a lot of long lines.
We happened to walk by the Mattel booth when there was no line for the one time at the con and got some exclusives that we were like, oh, those would be cool, but I don't really care. And we walked by, there was like two people in line. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll get in line and buy some exclusives.
Yeah, Ella loved her Wonder Woman Cheetah. She wants to be Cheetah for her birthday now.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we gave the girls theirs, and the first thing they said is, can we open it? And we're like, yeah, you can open it. So they
open it. But we're keeping the box. We're trying to keep the box in decent condition.
Yeah, so are we. But
because the box has a lot of stuff on it.
It does. It's cool. It has a lot of background stuff. It's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, it's all individually based. I would definitely go again. I think I like the way that you and I go.
I think we're gonna go again, right? I mean, no matter what, we're gonna go next year.
Yeah. And then we're trying to get out to New York Comic Con, so look out for that. We're going to try to go to Baltimore Comic Con, look out for that. No promises that we're going to make it to those, because
we'll do our best.
We're going to do our best, but we do need the cash flow to do that. We are setting up a Patreon account that should be set up soon, if not already.
It's set up, but it's not live yet, because I have to make some graphics for it. But
there you go. So we will send out the URL. We'll probably attach it to all of our.
Yeah, I'll go back and put it all in the descriptions for all the stuff.
Yeah. And then listen to us on YouTube at youtube.com/spoilercountry.
Yep. So, yeah, we're on YouTube. We're on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. We're on TuneIn. We're going to be on iHeartRadio soon, too. And any of those apps, if you just search Spoiler Country, you'll find us. Just look for our smiling faces with the little cartoons I made. You can find us on Twitter at Spoiler Country if you want to add us and ask us questions or talk to us or tell us, you know, you think we do a good job or a bad job. I don't really care. You can find us on Instagram. Oh, wait. On Spoiler Country, it's spoiler_country, because Spoiler Country was already taken. So there's an underscore in between the two words.
Right. But those guys aren't doing anything.
No, they're not doing anything at all.
I mean, I think the last post they had was like in 2016.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And you'll see that. We're much more prolific. Right. Yeah, we have a lot more episodes. Have a lot more content already. So
exactly. Yeah, hit up our Instagram, because I do post. I post pictures there, and I post stuff to our story every now and then, kind of talking about what we're talking about. If you want direct interaction with us, Twitter's probably the best way.
Go ahead.
I'll say, or email us at spoilercountry@gmail.com. We both check the email quite regularly.
That's right. It's on both our phones. Hey, and please like and share us on Facebook, on YouTube, on SoundCloud. Get us out there. That would really appreciate it and really help us out.
Yes, it would.
All right, thanks guys for joining us today. I think we're gonna wrap up here. Well, it's been a it's Go
it's
ahead.
Been fun. Before we go, is our next episode, are we finally going to do the review of Fuck Fairyland?
Sure.
Because we talked about it like three times. We haven't done it yet, so we should probably actually do that before we move on to the next stuff. I mean, I'm ready to go for it. So,
all right.
All right, cool.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today. Next episode is going to be I Hate Fairyland or F Fairyland or however you want to say it.
Right.
I am Kendrick Regan. That is Johnny Horsley over there. Peace.
We'll see you later.